Hey, everybody. Welcome to this interview. Joining me is Lisa Says What. Lisa, how you doing?
I am doing well, Dave. Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm all right. A little busy. You know that.
But yes, I see you on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, that's fun. But just for a point of reference, the last time we tried to do this, the Intergalactic Warlord Xenu prevented us from conducting this interview. So this is not live, and the Intergalactic Warlord Xenu has no idea this is happening, so everything should be smooth sailing this time.
I think you're right. I hope so. I'm crossing my fingers. You know, the carbonation gods are mad at me, too.
Yeah. We're doing this on the sneak. It's fine. So before we get started, where do you want people to look for you? I think YouTube's probably the first place these days.
Please, yes. If you are interested in the carbonation cult and its leader, Eligio Nature Boy Bishop, you can check me out on YouTube at Lisa Says What. I'm on Twitter at Lisa Says What. It's LisaSayWha. I had too many letters for T. And Twitch. At the same handle.
For the real homies.
Yes, exactly.
Or at least
for my OGs, for my day ones.
Yeah, for the people that hear it here, that's probably most likely where they're gonna find you. So before we get started here, I guess we are started. What am I talking about? Look at how professional interviewer. What is, like, broadly the Carbon Nation organization?
So the Carbon Nation is a group of what was supposed to be melanated people living off the grid in nature. They first located to Panama, with the first place they left the U.S. from Atlanta. Well, from all over the world, actually. And black people. And they're following after Eligio Nature Boy Bishop, who calls himself Nature Boy because he believed that melanated people need to live closer to the equator, and Western civilization is our downfall. And that's where he created, it was initially called Melanation. And he started letting white folks in with money, and he changed the name to Carbonation.
Well, you know, it's all about that money. So it started out essentially as like a black separatist group.
Absolutely. He believed in that black people, not necessarily, his ideology waffled. So at one point it may have been, you know, that only black people were allowed to live in this commune. But like I said, he met a young white girl by the name of Kayla Reed. He renamed her Sunray. And her parents went to the authorities saying, hey, my daughter is run away with this black cult. And the BBC and the CBC got involved, and they did interviews with he and Sunray. And, you know, she said she wasn't being held against her will. And she ultimately left the cult. But that gave Nature Boy his first image in the spotlight.
So what was the promise? Like, what was the hook or the advertising? What was somebody going to get out of joining this organization, or what were they saying they were going to get out of it? Maybe at the beginning versus toward the end. What was offered or what was promised, and how did that change?
Well, initially, he had a nice sizable audience on Facebook Live when it first launched. So he had developed a huge following by telling melanated people to get off the grid, eat vegan, God, you are God. God is everything. You are your own God. And, television and the internet and Western civilization was against you. The government has lied to you. He believed in chemtrails. So he kind of cast a very wide net. But I think when he was telling young black men, you can live here, you can be polygamous, you can have as many wives as you want, we're all nudist, we all live free, we eat vegan, we you know, we practiced grounding and astrology. It was irresistible to kids who were kind of square pegs, and they flocked to him.
It's funny because it almost sounds basic in a way, right? Like, it almost sounds like LA yoga studio shit in a way.
Absolutely. That's a good point. They all could have just moved to LA, and he was very open to the LGBTQ community. And he taught that everyone was bisexual. Everyone should be able to have sex with whomever they wanted, whenever they wanted, however they wanted. And so that was appealing to kids who were struggling with their sexuality. A couple of them were still in their teens when they started watching him. Between the time they got indoctrinated online to coming to live with them, coming to live in nature with Nature Boy, they had, you know, found a place where they could live out their sexuality without judgment.
Also, like you said, they could have just moved to LA, where they could have done that too.
But it was actually probably cheaper to go live in Central America.
Right. And you had mentioned he was doing this on Facebook Live, so the question I have there is, once the people got to the, we'll say the location, no, we'll call mm-hmm. it a compound, fuck it, I like the word
compound. The compound, yeah.
Once they got there, were they then cut off from the internet?
No. Actually, the internet was what he used to get donations for his cause, like I said, which changed constantly. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Which constantly was changing, depended greatly on what country they were in. But he was used the internet to bring in more members and to get donations and. I kind of lost my train of thought, Dave.
Oh, that's okay. Well, right. He was still on the internet. What I meant to ask, and I should have been more clear, were the members, when they arrived, were those people also using the internet maybe to help recruit, or were those people sort of cut off?
No. He relied heavily on the internet, and he had the members who were these beautiful. He was selective about who he would allow in. You know, so these beautiful black bodies naked in the jungle with leaves taped to their boobs and diving into waterfalls and making music. So they used the internet for, you know, to get out their music. That was their primary source of engagement.
Okay, I understand now. They were basically, once you got there, you were now expected to be using the internet to become a minor influencer yourself and help recruit for the organization.
Absolutely, because everyone had to have the same internet icons. Their content had to be about him. His icon replaced your icon. Your name had to read a certain way, and he controlled the person who controlled all of the output.
Okay,
so and it's didn't allow any input.
So it's different than a group like Scientology, where they do try to cut you off from the world. This guy wanted you to be reaching out to the world, but he wanted to make sure that you were doing it in a specific fucking way that benefited him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It had to benefit, as he would say, the family.
But as we'll find out as this interview goes on, that he meant benefit himself.
Absolutely.
So you said Panama. After Panama, where did this group find it land next?
I meant Honduras. The first place they landed was Honduras.
Okay.
He was bequeathed, I believe it was 30 acres and a home. But when he got there, it didn't meet his standards because the land still had to be cleared and there were some plumbing issues and the house was old and dilapidated. But remember, he's supposed to be living in nature.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I was like, well, wait a minute. Isn't that the land needs to be cleared? Sounds like nature to me, friend.
Exactly. But he did not see it that way. He said, and he doesn't like bugs. So you go figure.
That's fucking hilarious. We're going to do this nature thing, but no bugs.
In nature.
Right.
And so he, yeah, so they started off in Panama. They got in Honduras. They were robbed of everything. He went online after they were, they were robbed by these banditos. And the story is that when they pulled out their machetes and their AK-47s, he ran like a chicken and almost trampled his own wife.
I mean, I would run too.
But not if you're the leader of a cult. Oh. You're supposed to stick around.
Oh, no, I would. I mean, he was probably hoping, like, did everybody, do you know if, and this is weird because, like, we weren't there or whatever. Did everyone run or did he just run?
No, he's the only one that ran. They were all scared shitless. But see, he's about 20 years older than the average member. And right. He had lived a very interesting life prior. You know, he was basically raised in the streets and in foster care. So, you know, his instinct was, you see a gun, you run.
That's a good instinct.
But all these kids that he lured over there were pretty middle class, run of the mill kids, you know, who were just a little different than the rest.
Right,
but they
maybe
came
they
from two parent households, or maybe in military background. They had a wide range of backgrounds, but none of them were as downtrodden as his.
Right, and some of them were probably like kind of in disbelief maybe of what was happening even when the robbery occurred.
Absolutely.
They were not prepared for that kind of thing. And it's not surprising that he was trying to recruit young people from a higher socioeconomic status because they're going to be able to maybe trick their family into giving them money or whatever if they're able to lie about what they're doing. I mean, that makes total sense.
Well, he got, like I said, he got handed over a home and property. He turned his nose up at that. But just as he was doing that, one of the members came into his inheritance, joined the cult, and gave him $300,000.
Was that the whole inheritance? They didn't keep none for themselves?
No, he donated all of his inheritance to the cult, which they promptly began staying at Airbnbs and flying in women from all around the world.
So after Honduras, where did this organization find itself?
Honduras, Costa Rica, and they got kicked out of Costa Rica after the media attention with Kayla Reed, and they had expired visas, and they had a standoff at the border. They were being escorted to a immigration detention center. And they refused to get off the van. Nature Boy screaming. He goes online and he starts screaming, "I should need papers to live in nature." And he's chanting. And he racked up a considerable amount of donations based on that little stunt he pulled.
At this time, what would you say his following was like? Were we talking tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions?
Probably about 500,000 across social media. But you've got to remember, he was fishing in a very small pool,
right?
Because he was, you know, he's looking for young kids between the ages of 14. And 25 African Americans, preferably, you know, young, beautiful females.
Right.
And what he was selling, and for some women, he's a very attractive guy, and he speaks very well. Now, what he's saying is nonsense, but if you don't know it's nonsense because you're only 14 or 19, then it sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
That's one of the. You came into my community through the intellectual Dollar Tree. I'm intimately familiar with the concept of saying a bunch of nonsense and sounding like you're a genius.
Exactly. And maybe that's what drew me to Nature Boy, is spending so much time, you know, on the intellectual Dollar Tree, you know, listening to people like Brett Weinstein, listening to people like, what's the other Brett Weinstein?
Eric Weinstein.
Yes, that one. Jordan Peterson. I mean, it's a good that you have a show that pokes fun at them.
Right. And but you're, you know, that it's a they're aiming for a very different audience. But the tactic is, you know, familiar to me. It's, you know, authoritatively saying things that aren't really backed in fact and sort of using whatever, you know, there are ways in which some people might think that, you know, the Weinsteins are academics, right? Where this Nature Boy, some of it came from the fact that he's a bit of a smoke show. And he was, you know, like you said, telling young people some of the stuff maybe they wanted to hear, because this world is really tough for young people, you know, like everything they're doing is online. People, it's, you know, rent's high. There's a, you know, it's attractive to be like, well, I'm just going to go live off the land and make videos.
Absolutely. That's exactly one of his sales tactics. You can come here and you can make conscious music, music that uplifts the race. It's counter hip hop. We're talking about living in nature and getting in tune with yourself and living polygamous and, you know, and eating fruit and, you know, instead of as opposed to gangster rap.
Right, which is interesting in some ways because, you know, I mean, I'm not, you know, I primarily like electronic music and local bands, but I also like, this is a, it shows like it's sort of a manipulation tactic too, because like hip hop is actually like, it's telling the story of the city. And, you know, things have changed a lot, but in the 80s and 90s, the story in the city for black people, a lot of times was a story of violence, a story of, you know, brutality, not only from the police, but oftentimes from your own community, if you got on the wrong side of the wrong person. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's not necessarily uplifting, but it is certainly did a good job of, through its ability to become mainstream, certainly did a good job of educating a lot of people as to what the fuck was happening. And so I think that, you know, that the idea that was bad or that there's a problem with that, I disagree with the premise there.
With hip hop as a political statement, you know, as opposed to, you know, all of the, you know, nuances in it. I get that. Yeah. So that was really, you know, and I must say, some of the music was damn good.
Oh yeah. That was just some, you know, some of the remixes and the beats and just absolutely amazing stuff. It was also a lot of ways in which it brought that hip hop brought electronic music and like the idea of sampling into the mainstream. And I think without hip hop having come up in the 80s, I'm not sure the rave scene would have come up in the 90s the way that it did.
Oh, I think they're hand in hand, just like the punk movement spurred on hip hop.
Yeah, people don't understand this. People are woefully ignorant about a lot of these things. Man, we should do another interview about music.
Oh, that would be great. I know, definitely.
So what happened? So they got busted by immigration in Costa Rica, which sounds like not the best place in the world to get busted by immigration officials.
No. Like they literally drug them off of the butt off the van by their hair. By their dreadlocks.
Well, that's a little bit rude.
It is, but the standoff went on, and I think they got off pretty lucky because everyone was armed except for Carbonation. So they got off pretty damn lucky with a few bumps and bruises. So they get kicked out of Costa Rica. They tell them they've got to take a flight back to the United States. They get on the Spirit airline, and the, I don't want to call them steward, flight attendants are getting complaints from the other passengers saying, hey, check it out. I don't know who these people are, but they stink and you got to get them off this flight. So they get kicked off their flight back to the U.S. because they smelled so poorly. And it made all of the newspaper all over Central America about the stinky cult getting kicked off of a Spirit airline.
That's my kind of story. Reminds me of the time that the Scientology boat couldn't dock anywhere because not everybody on board, but an insignificant people and number of people on that fucking ship had measles, right? It's sort of the same idea.
Oh, yes, exactly. So they go back to Central America. I believe it's Panama. They drive from Honduras down to all the way down to Panama. And so that took them about 3 months, 3-4 months. In that time, babies are born, people have come, people left. He's just getting bigger and bigger, and his online presence is growing. And finally, they land back in, they get kicked out of nearly every place in Central America they landed. And so they settled on Mexico for a while. And he took on more wives. He married and divorced, and that's a whole story within itself. But his control over these people began getting more and more intense. The more people that joined, the more money that they earned in donations, the bigger his personality got online. That started to carry over into his life with the cult. And instead of calling him Master Teacher, he had several names, but they would call him Master Teacher. And when they would, after a while, that wasn't good enough, he just became God.
Yeah, I was
and
wondering.
It was very gradual.
When that switch was going to flip, and it was sometime, basically in the process of being somewhat nomadic, that he became God.
Yes. And what he would do is he would allow the men to get married, or, you know, these are all spiritual marriages, by the way. He would allow the men to get married, and then he would decide one day, you know what, they're all for me, and take all of the women back.
This is a common practice among cult leaders, right? As time goes on, if sex is an aspect of the cult, like, for example, in Scientology, there's not a lot of sex going on, so David Miscavige isn't fucking everybody. But if a part of the thing is a promise of polyamory or polygamy or whatever, however you want to call it, multiple wives, it seems like almost every one of these stories, eventually the leader decides, well, maybe what if all the people I want to fuck are actually mine now?
Exactly. And that's exactly what he did. And so then after being kicked out of Mexico, I believe they had some passport issues. So they ended up kind of broke back here after the pandemic. They had exhausted all of their PPP loans that they
they got loans from the government.
Multiple. I think he had his hands on, you know, probably, I don't know. I don't want to make it, but it was a considerable amount of money.
Right. Just the fact that they got any money as this nomadic sex cult, like that wasn't even in the United States. That's amazing. But this is a government incompetence, rank incompetence.
Rank incompetence. They were throwing out that PPP loans just to anybody, and they were proof positive of that. And they were collecting welfare and unemployment and food stamps once they got back to the States. So you figure, if I've got to relocate, I'm going to relocate back to my hometown of Atlanta, Georgia. And that's where they ultimately landed, in the suburb of Atlanta in DeKalb County.
We're getting pretty close to present day here. By this time, by the way, had any of the social media platforms kind of caught on to what was going on and started kicking them off or anything like that?
Oh, definitely. There was a contingency of online observers who had been watching this trial. I mean, watching the Nature Boy since 2015, 2016, when he first started. And they noticed the change in the dynamic of the cult, and there were women being abused, physically abused. He would go on tirades and demean them, and the men were being humiliated online. And he hadn't introduced the physical abuse online yet, but he started exhibiting more and more of his God complex. And so this cadre of online observers just be and content creators became notifying the police that there was a cult living in a suburban community, you know, there in Atlanta. And so the police were called probably daily. But because, you know, being a cult in the suburb is not illegal, there was really nothing they could do, even with the presence of children there. You know, they would call CPS and they would come out, but they would find the child, that the children were fine. And so, you know, there was really nothing anyone could do. The owner was getting close to $5,000 a month in rent. So he wasn't complaining. The the HOA was complaining that the music was loud and they were doing weird rituals in the backyard, but the police were powerless to do anything about it.
Right, right. And honestly, like, you know, fuck the HOA, you know? Like, not that HOA. I mean, I figure they were probably trying, whatever their motivations were. Yeah, whatever their that HOA's motivations were, they actually ended up being on the right side of things. But there's, you know, you could see where the police might be like, well, this is just like nosy neighbor shit and we're not getting involved.
I think that is exactly what they did. They were thinking, except for a couple of detectives who Nature Boy had been on their radar for quite some time since he returned back here to the States. And they were very much aware of him and documented all of those welfare checks. Because people and parents were calling also because their kids were there.
Right. That's different than nosy neighbor shit. If the parents are like, if the kids are minors, if the kids aren't minors, again, not a lot they can do. But if some of the kids were minors, then that's a much bigger deal.
The only minors that were there with their parents.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay,
yeah.
So was he careful not to fly anyone out to have them physically join his cult until they were of age? Or was it just at this point the recruiting part was done? And so everybody who might have been there at 16 is now over 18.
The recruiting was maintained online until they were about 18 and they could figure out, you know, they were legally able to come. If there were any minors there that weren't accompanied by their parents, they didn't go online.
Gotcha. They were the guy knew, right? If they were there, he wasn't putting them on camera.
Absolutely. He was very careful to not to skirt any laws here in America. Gotcha. He knew he had a First Amendment right to be a cult, and he said that. He said as much. And, and in Georgia, you know, that's the Bible Belt.
Right.
And so you should expect to have, you know, a black cult living in a, you know, 90% white neighborhood. The cops know that they're, you know, going to get called.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely true. So what was the incident or what set of incidents led to Nature Boy's eventual arrest?
Well, he took everyone to Las Vegas and had everyone legally marry. Well, as many couples as he could convince to legally marry. So that's a big step. And he married his daughter's mother. She ultimately left him, and because she didn't like polygamy. And some of the couples, you know, now that they were married, he pulled his trick again and took back all of the women. And so within those women that he took back, and that he had in his harem, he wanted a queen. And so he had a beauty contest to see who could be his goddess. And of course, the women outdid themselves. I don't know what they had to do, but he made this a big deal. And so one of the women in the beauty, in the contest to be his queen, he really liked her. I believe he really had a thing for her, and she was in love with someone else. This is almost gets Shakespearean. Well, he would not allow her to be with the guy she loved. So she decided she wanted to leave the cult. But before she could leave, he decided he wanted to have sex with her. And she told him no multiple times. And he brought her into a room, had his way with her. And when he found out that she left the next morning, and he posted video of them having sex. She found this out on social media. Someone brought it to her attention that she was on Pornhub and Twitter, and she went to the police, and she told the police her entire ordeal, that she was hit, that she was struck, and that, you know, he had his way with her. I'm for YouTube audiences, I don't want to say, and that he sexually assaulted her. And that was the first time the police actually had a reason to investigate him, out of all those, you know, wellness checks and, you know, noise complaints. And so two of the detectives that were on the took this seriously, and even had to brought him in, arrested him, interrogated him, and he basically confessed. He said stupid things like, "I'm a ladies' man and they call me Mandingo, and I don't have to rape anybody."
Right, right. If I do it, it's not sexual assault, essentially.
Sexual assault.
Oh no, we can. I'm not afraid of using the word rape, but yeah.
Okay.
That's a crazy thing to tell the police.
That is, and he said he also he talked to the police without the benefit of an attorney for 49 minutes.
Dumb fuck.
And during the trial, when the jury wanted to have a second look at some of the evidence, one of the exhibits, what do you think they wanted to see? They wanted to hear that 49-minute audio of him talking to detectives without an attorney, and him saying, "She told me no, but."
Yeah, that's what's commonly known as a confession. Yes.
Bingo.
Well, I suppose there's no cliffhanger here. The guy was convicted.
No, the only thing that was surprising, I think it took the jury about 12 hours to come back with the decision, and he was sentenced because of his conduct. The judge said, "Because of your conduct in the courtroom, I'm going to sentence you to life without the possibility of parole, plus 10 years.
That's crazy. So he managed to piss the judge off so bad that just his disrespectful conduct in the courtroom ended up acting almost like a sentencing enhancement, because he couldn't just shut the fuck up and go with the program.
Absolutely. And I neglected to tell you that he fired his attorney during trial, hoping that that would create a mistrial. And the judge told him, "We're going to continue this trial with or without you, and you will not be able to cross examine any witnesses. We're going to go straight to closing arguments. So let's get to it." And like I said, they put him in a cell with an iPad and let him watch the rest of his hearing.
Almost like he was watching his own. He was watching his own trial like it was a TV show at this point.
Isn't that fitting?
Kind of, yeah. Considering that he had essentially made his cult into almost a TV show most of the time.
Absolutely. People online called it "Love and Flip Flops."
Love and Flip Flops. Well, that's kind of funny. Unfortunately, the story we've heard here isn't funny. So I want to move on to this is the first time for you essentially going out and doing in-person journalism. And it must have been kind of intimidating seeing it was your first time, because this is a pretty important fucking case. Can you talk a little bit about your decision to travel to Atlanta and, you know, maybe what what kinds of things you were nervous about, what you were excited about, you know, or any sort of stuff that was kind of going on in your mind as you made the decision to go out there?
Once we knew they had a trial date, I was going. Nothing was going to stop me. I did a lot of fundraising on my channel. My community came through for me. And once they purchased my plane ticket, I was there. So I want to say shout out to my subscribers, my members, all the people that sent me in cash apps and money. I appreciate you. Because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have been able to go. But I was excited and I wanted to see him. I wanted to see him in person. I had talked to him over the years, over the telephone, and watched, you know, copious hours of videos of him. And so seeing him and the members in person really brought a new perspective for me. I realized that these are not just people on my television or my computer screen, that they're real people with real feelings and real emotions. And there were parents in the courtroom who were holding on for dear life during the sentencing. And it was amazing. It was a once in a lifetime opportunity, and so I took it.
This being like a high control, high demand group with people who are very dedicated to this man, I suppose you had to consider that you might be under some kind of surveillance as a being there to report on it. Did you engage in any sort of counter surveillance things to kind of keep yourself safe?
Ooh, prayer. That was we did. Well, we changed hotels a couple times, and because I went with another content creator, we did the buddy system.
Good.
And we did get some threats before we went, and we let the DA know, and you know, they had so much security in the courtroom and outside of the courtroom, all the way to, you know, to escort you to your car. And because we were media, you know, they protected us. But yeah, I was never afraid, though. I wasn't afraid, even with the threats. I just kept focused because I knew I had to. If I didn't stay focused on this, I wouldn't get there.
Yeah, because it was a lot of work, right? Like, you were there getting up early in the morning to go to the trial to make sure that you could get in the courtroom. And then you were probably up late doing commentary on YouTube and whatnot.
Yes, it was. It was exhilarating. I was kind of, you know, like I told you before, that the judge caught COVID during the trial. And so that's why Nature Boy fired his attorney, because they wouldn't stop the trial and give the judge time to get a clean test. And so we had a day off. The judge agreed to compromise and take one day off, because that would have been her 5 days, you know, that you have to quarantine. And so that day I crashed, and I think I was on 4 shows in one day talking about the trial. And so, yeah, it was exhilarating. But oh my goodness, it's what you kind of live for, right? You know, when you're in down this rabbit hole, you got to find the brass ring somewhere.
Well, that's amazing, and I'm not surprised to find out that you didn't get scared. You don't. I've known you, you know, over the internet and as being part of my community for a while, and you don't strike me as the scares easy type. So,
yeah, they had bark a little louder. They went to get me away.
And you know, from kind of looking through your channel during the course of the trial, it seems like some of the people turned on him.
Oh, that's the young woman who went to the police, who all, you know, she should get all the praise, because had she not gone, there had been a lot of people abused, a lot of people sexually assaulted, a lot of people financially exploited throughout the 7 years of carbonation. And she's the first one to go and say, no, this is not right. And, when she took the stand, you could have, I think that sealed his fate. You know, wait a minute, you asked, I'm sorry, I kind of got sidetracked.
No, that's okay.
No, what was the question again, Dave?
My impression, and it could be incorrect because I didn't follow it as closely as I maybe possibly could have because I am a crazy person who streams six nights a week.
Right.
But during the trial, my impression was that in the midst of the trial, there were people that had turned on him during the course of this.
Yes, yes, that's what I was getting to. The young woman who reported him for the sexual assault, after she had finished her testimony, a woman who had been sitting on the defense side, on Nature Boy's side, crossed over, handed her a note, and the note said, may God forgive me for doubting you, and handed it to her. And she, and that lady had been over there on the defense side the entire trial, and she definitely was a believer. She believed in Nature Boy. She cared about Nature Boy, but she knew that he had done this. And most of his cult had fallen by the wayside after he was arrested. Some of them are still to this day with him. And are when they shaved his head, when they shaved off his dreadlocks at the they're moving him from the prison to the, I mean, from the jail to the prison, they, all of his members shaved their heads too.
Like some kind of solidarity.
So, in solidarity with him. And so he still has, he has a GoFundMe page up right now that's asking for $13,000. They've managed to raise $3,777, I believe. So he still has people willing to pay him money and to support his lifestyle.
What is the state of the organization at this time? Obviously, you don't have to be a genius to figure out they probably don't have that house anymore, right?
No, they were evicted from the house ultimately in Atlanta. They are living, the wives were living outside of the jail for a short period of time after they flew the drone into the jail. I forgot to tell you about that part too. After they flew the drone into the jail loaded with contraband to help pay for an attorney, they lived outside of the van for a while, and they lived in homeless shelters, and then they had money for long-term stays. Right now, they're all living in a house in Atlanta, waiting to find out what prison he's going to be ultimately sent to.
And is there any organized effort at this time, maybe, to try to help some of those people who are still living in that house who might be open to the help?
Their family members probably have taken a hands-off approach to getting them out because they've fought this for so long. There are people online who have offered help and helping them onboard back into society. But as far as an organization or anything like that, no. The one thing that Nature Boy used to tell them when he would abuse the women is like, he would say, "You're just a bunch of black girls. Nobody's going to care about you."
Ooh, and yikes.
Yeah. And in a lot
so much
of ways,
for black empowerment, right?
Right. But he was right, because the media initially did not, had it not been for the salacious parts of this, the media really wouldn't have paid attention to it. And that's why I cover it, because there are still four beautiful young black women caught in this cult. And I'm going to keep reporting about it and keep talking about it. Until they're home, until they're freed from his clutches.
Yeah, it's that pull is pretty strong. I mean, you know, luckily enough, like, I think you and I can thank our lucky stars, or what, you know, you worship a god or whoever it is that are constitutionally and dispositionally, that we're so thus far have not been inclined in a way that somebody has been able to do this with us, but you know, we can report on this stuff and talk about it till we're blue in the face, but I'm not confident that we're ever going to be able to like understand, like on a visceral or emotional level, the kind of pull someone like him or any other cult leader might have on the most dedicated members.
Well, I got to say that you have helped me in my cynicism and helped boost me to a cynic level 9.
Now, I know cynicism gets a bad rap, but it is not a bad tool to have in your tool belt.
Absolutely. It's like anger. You need it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Just as long as that shit's pointed the right way and it doesn't, the anger doesn't turn into violence. Generally, the anger can be, the anger and the cynicism can be really important things. You know,
yeah, because cynicism can turn into paranoia.
Right. You don't want that.
Exactly.
Especially if somebody's after you. If somebody's actually after you, paranoia is bad, right? Because you need to be able to skeptically, and I hate the word skepticism now, but you need to be able to skeptically assess the situation and see, think about what the fuck's going on. If somebody actually is out to get you, doesn't help exactly. Be paranoid. You start acting the fool and do things that get you found.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, this is, I just, you know, it's not just me. I think like the whole community is actually like super proud of you and impressed with the work that you've done here. You know, the small part that I played in helping you get set up and helping you, you know, helping you understand that you can do this, because if I can do it, so can you. You know, I'm you know, really, really happy.
That's not fair, because you make it look very easy, and it's not.
No, it's not. No, it's not. That is true. And to the extent sometimes, you know, my frustration with the process is probably more visible than other times, though I've been, you know, engaging in a bit more self-care, making sure to get more sleep, drinking less, smoking more weed, that kind of stuff, you know.
Good balance.
Yeah, good balance. But, you know, just that you just immediately, once this trial happened and you've been covering this, you're like, I'm going. You're like, as so long as I have the wherewithal, I imagine the first thing in your mind was probably the financial wherewithal to do this. You're like, as long as I have the financial wherewithal to do this, that was that. I think, you know, you act like, oh, it was just what I had to do. But I think other people are going to see this as like a brave thing for a fairly new content creator to do. And I just kind of wanted to acknowledge that.
Oh, thank you so much. I guess it was kind of crazy.
Yeah. Don't go getting a big ego, Lisa.
Too late.
Too late.
You're like 50 years too late.
Fuck yeah. Well, this is, you know, I'm kind of glad actually now that we ended up doing this off the live without the chat. So we were able to, I think, keep it a little more tight this way. And that's real good. I guess we're kind of done here. But I do want to ask, what's next? Are you looking into other control and demand groups? Are you cut your feelers out? Are you noticing anything that might be off of other people's radar right now?
As a matter of fact, I am, Dave. It is called the Black Hammer Cult, led by a guy named Gozi Hadzo. No, it is not. It's another black cult out of Atlanta, out of Georgia. They're in Fayetteville. And this was you'll be interested in this because it had the political twist. Not only were they a black separatist group and they had planned to buy some land up in Colorado, and that was their motto, land back. And very much like Nature Boy, very flamboyant leader, more flamboyant than charismatic. And during the 2020 election, Russia was paying this group to create disinformation in the black community to avert the black vote from Joe Biden to Donald Trump. And so they are sitting in federal court now. Their trial is set for September 3rd.
Do you know what the charges are?
Acting without it. What is it? Crackers.
Some espionage act shit or something like that?
Some espionage stuff, but wait a minute. It's being a unlisted foreign agent.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. The same thing. What was it? Who was that? Was it Oh, it was Flynn.
Paul Manafort.
Manafort, right. It was the same type of charge that maybe that Manafort got.
Absolutely. And it's a very interesting story. I did a piece on them on my channel recently when we got noticed that their case was going to federal trial. He's also wanted in prison now on charges of sodomy, kidnapping, and running a criminal street gang.
Ooh, yikes. All right. Well,
yes.
You're sure finding some interesting fucking people that are off my radar.
They're off most people's radar. We're just weird like that, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess like I do. I have found some interesting people that are off of other people's radar too. You know what? I'll take care of the white crazy people. You take care of the black crazy people. And then
that's a deal. That is a deal. But you know, Russell J. Gould has crossed over to both of these cases.
Wait, what? Really?
Nature Boy, about a year ago, filed his sovereign citizen papers. And it had the semicolon hyphen Nature Boy, all capital letters, and the seal from Russell J. Gould's organization.
See, that's interesting because had you not been part of our community, it would have, instead of being like, I know exactly what that is when it happened, you'd have had to look into it. And then maybe you would have found us at that point.
Maybe. Yes. I would have never. And if you don't know who Russell J. Gould is, just do a quick Google search. You're in for a treat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He crazy. He crazy. We got a soundboard for him.
Exactly.
Also, real quick, just shout out to Time for Tinfoil, also on Twitch, who does coverage of Russell J. Gould.
Yes, Time for Tinfoil. How is Time for Tinfoil?
I see him streaming, but like it's hard to stay in touch with everybody all the time, though. I do probably have to get him back on the live show. And speaking of which, once you're off your staycation and you get your camera set up and your husband's like, okay, I guess you can go on a show now.
Yes.
We'd love to have you on for something more fun, casual, maybe a Catterday or a conspiracy bingo or something like that. So
conspiracy bingo is my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just wanted to, once again, just wanted to kind of express how proud I am and how proud the community is of the work you've done. And, you know, just, I'm just honored to have played a small role in it. And when you said you were going out there to cover that trial, I was just, it's like, I don't have any kids or whatever, but it gave me some sort of maybe small version of what it's like when a parent sees their kid going out to do something that they maybe didn't expect them to do, you know?
Oh, thank you, Dave. You're gonna make me cry.
We can't cry. Then there will be no crying during this interview.
No crying in the now space.
Well, Lisa, before we get out of here, can you remind everybody again where the best place is to find you? Of course, I'll put links in the show notes, but people may not.
Thank you. Yes, yes. You can catch my show on Tuesdays and Thursdays on Carbonation Updates. And I give you all of the updates and some back dates on how the his appeal is going and the members of the cult that have stayed and former members.
And I guess this will be the first time you get to do it. We're going to play a song. Do you want to introduce the song that's going to play before we, after the interview here?
This song has a killer bass line and it's my favorite, Boomers by Periscope.